them men are dickheads. Yep. Don't fucking chat to me. Too far gone, there's no coming back for me. Son, these boys don't dare chat back to me.
A podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of excitement. I love it.
It's our last podcast of the year.
Season. True, true.
2017. Slowly but surely coming to an end. And obviously, that means it is time to do our year in review.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people would claim after the upset victory of Doug Jones.
Was it an upset?
It was a major upset. Look, let me be clear. I graduated from high school in Birmingham, Alabama. I don't have any family in Birmingham anymore, but I graduated from high school in Birmingham, Alabama. I still have all my peeps who were in the state scattered about. I have my man, Randall Woodfin, who just won the mayoral race. Right. I had friends on Facebook talking about he just gonna have to do two jobs because I'm gonna write him in for Senate too. Right. Nobody was paying attention to this election, though, until the Washington Post delivered that huge investigative story on Roy Moore, the Republican candidate, and how he sexually harassed women and was a predator, basically trying to get teenage girls. Right. Nobody was paying attention because the Democrats are not active on a state level in Alabama.
It's like they're just not even trying.
They're not trying because 25 years ago, the last Democrat was elected to the Senate and he switched 2 years later to Republican. He's still in the Senate. So, you know, and a lot of people outside of the U.S. were commenting on this without understanding U.S. politics. Okay, that's fine. But the whole black women just saved Alabama thing really was annoying. That's not what we need to give prop. Yeah, it was annoying. It was annoying.
Mm-hmm. Tell me why.
Because black women didn't. Okay, if you want to go technically, yes, black women saved Alabama. But they weren't saving Alabama to save Alabama. They were out there making sure that they don't have another Trump situation on their hands. Right? They came out. 30% of the population that voted was black versus 26% of the black population in the state, right? So they were determined to do all they could to make things right. And I think it's annoying that while everyone is over here celebrating black women as they rarely do, that they're not talking more about the 63% of white women who voted for Roy Moore. And just like we saw in a tweet, somebody said, if 63% of black folks would have voted for a pedophile, there would be, you know, on every news channel, there would be all these psychologists and researchers and political analysts on there talking about how deprived and
what's wrong with them.
Right. But that's not happening. So, no, I'm not here for those celebrations. But I think it is interesting that people are calling this the year of the woman when the things that have been happening with the women is actually quite negative. It's coming to light. It's been happening all these years. So maybe there's something positive about that. But is it? If we look at, for example, Me Too, what's going on with Me Too? We got Selma Hayek coming out with the New York Times op-ed. You got some thoughts?
I got a lot of thoughts on Miss Selma.
What's your thoughts on Frida Kahlo? What's going on?
So Selma Hayek came out with a New York Times a Guardian. New York Times? Okay, because a Guardian be just reprinting stuff word for word. Quotation be looking like a whole article. But yeah, so she came out talking about that she was sexually harassed for years and threatened, even with death threats from Harvey Weinstein. And at the beginning of 2017, there was a roundtable of women that included Jessica Williams and Selma Hayek. And Jessica Williams is a black woman, mentions race, and Selma Hayek shut it down, said, "Who are you if you are not a woman Kind of new agey type. That sounds new agey enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are you when you're not a woman?
Mm-hmm.
You know, has some choice words like angry up in there. You know, stuff like
that. Yeah, we talked about it.
Mm-hmm. We talked about it. So here it comes full circle, and people are like, look, I believe you, and I hope that this causes you to reflect on how you treated somebody else.
But why would you do that? How is that the same thing?
It's the same thing, because it's like, you know, so you can't understand us, you know, the power dynamic that somebody else is facing, but you're real clear about your own power dynamic in the terms of like when you don't have the power. You're real clear about issues where you're being exploited, but you're not, if you are implicated in someone else's exploitation or oppression, you are not ready to see that at all. And that happens a lot.
You can't be both a victim and perpetrator. It's not possible.
Right. I mean, that especially happens in the LGBT community, because there are a lot of people that, because they are a sexual minority, feel that they have carte blanche to do all sorts of things that are oppressive and exploitive. Because how could they possibly not get it, right? Because they're gay, they're trans, or whatever. And we know that's not true.
Of course. I mean, okay. So obviously, Gabrielle Union has spoken, even before publishing her book, quite openly about the fact that she was raped at the age of 19. And she has commented on the Me Too campaign / movement, if you will. And she says, quote, "I think the floodgates have opened for white women. I don't think it's a coincidence whose pain has been taken seriously, whose pain we have showed historically and continue to show, whose pain is tolerable and whose pain is intolerable, and whose pain needs to be addressed now," end quote. But Selma Hayek ain't white. But she Hollywood royalty. It's a lot of silence. What's going on? I'm just saying. But on the other end of things, right, we're hearing a lot about Harvey Weinstein, but are we hearing as much about Tavis Smiley and Russell Simmons in the mainstream? I mean, we did have, obviously, talking about it, I think PBS has indefinitely suspended Tavis Smiley's show mm-hmm. that has been running for a very long time, at least over a decade now.
Russell Simmons stepped down.
He had to step down, right? It's not like he did that company. Voluntarily. But are we hearing as much about them, and do we
in the mainstream?
Yeah,
I think mainstream has shown itself with their countless op-eds. Even in Alabama, they're like, "What do white people think?" Right? So they have a focus on whiteness, and they have an apprehension to cover stories that feel like they're pandering to negative stereotypes, unless they're Fox.
Of course.
Yeah. So because they don't know how to deal with race in general, and they definitely don't know how to deal with it at any level of nuance. And since they understand that on some level, there's kind of a gingerness that comes, and it's the gingerness that let Bill Cosby slide for so long. This apprehension to take this like pillar of a community type Black figurehead and say, oh yeah, by the way, he's raping everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so there definitely is that. And then another piece of it is that segregation is so still entrenched and embedded in American culture in a way that people don't quite understand.
Mm-hmm.
That I think that the news media, or the white news media, I should say, is kind of has an attitude of y'all handle y'all business. We over here doing us, right? Mm-hmm. So unless you have a crossover character like Oprah or Michael Jackson or what, we don't really want to talk about all that. we don't want to get into the trenches on some Tavis Smiley, Russell Simmons, right? So that's the sense I get of what's happening. But to be clear, the victims of all of the people that I mentioned aren't exclusively Black.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, the only known predator, Black predator, that was real clear about having almost exclusively Black victims was R. Kelly.
not almost exclusively. I'm pretty sure it's exclusively.
It's exclusive, yes. As far as we know.
As far as we know, right. But that's, you know, that's, he's very clear about who he supposedly is into. So, but do you think Gabrielle Union has a point?
Yes, definitely. She's spot on about a lot of things. Gabrielle Union be hitting you with truth all the time. And I'm sure she would say more if she was ready to hang up her hat. If she didn't have to get jobs in these streets.
But what is it about Black women's, what's the difference? Are we not rapeable?
No. I mean, like, this country has been built on the rape of Black women. I mean, like, this country, but America has been built on the rape of Black women. If you don't have the rape of Black women, you don't have an American economy. You don't have an America.
That's kind of deep. So, in review, 2017, Year of the Woman, Me Too, after Tarana Burke was excluded from Time cover. What do you think? What do you say? Was it the Year of the Woman? Because I believe Merriam-Webster has made feminism its word of 2017. We started with pink pussy hats. We've ended with Me Too. Does that definitely seem that way? Does that mean that we've missed the point as women ourselves? One, that not all women have pussies, and two, that we shouldn't target the pussy because Me Too?
Oh gosh, see, this is the point in the college conversation where Denise starts to doodle. I'm like, what? Could you please repeat the question?
Well, if you're looking at how the year started with pink pussy hats and Women's March, right? Mm-hmm. And we're ending on a very strong Me Too note, which is targeting the pussy, right? Sexual harassment, rape, sexual assault. There was a lot of talk that the pussy hat was wrong because it is trans exclusive.
Well, the Women's March, I think, is beyond the pussy hats. There was this Women's March that was really mobilizing that got sort of sidelined by these pussy hats that were worn by mostly white women. The thing is that that's what ends up happening with a lot of these movements that include all women, but then end up centering white cishet women. Mm-hmm. Right, and their needs, and what's interesting about that is that the polls have shown, and how people have voted from Trump down to Roy Moore, that white cishet women are the one demographic of women that are the most unfeminist of women, right? Because they are more invested in white supremacy than in even their own womanhood.
But that's not what they would claim. They would claim in this Alabama Senate race, and I saw it many times. Mm-hmm. I saw it. They will never vote for someone who is pro-abortion. Now, the interesting thing about that statement is, and I'm not going to spend too much time on it, because there's a whole, like, if you understand the political structures, you understand that the senator has no say whatsoever on abortions, because anyway, but what's interesting about that is to claim that you care so much about life in the womb, but care so little about what happens to that life as soon as it exits the womb. It's really problematic. Right.
And also, if reproductive health and bodily autonomy is not part of your political framework, then you're not a feminist, period. So you can claim that the color green is Black all day long, but feminism has a specific political ideology that has been in Black and white and has been established from scholars for a long time. This is not newness. Like, you don't just get to make it up as you go along, right? So if you don't, if you're not here for the reproductive autonomy and choice of all women, not just yourself, but all women, then you're not here for feminism, period, point blank. And so cishet white women, in the way that they have voted and choices that they have made from the presidential race down to the Senate race and local races, have shown themselves to see their interests more aligned with other white men, with white men, than they see it aligned with other women in general. Mm-hmm. And they shouldn't be centered when you're talking about feminism because of that.
Well, there you go. other things that have been noticeable about 2017, BuzzFeed titled it The Disappearance of Black Lives Matter. Now, it's interesting because... The disappearance of Black Lives Matter. Mm. Now, you know, Patrice Cullors is in the process of publishing a book. They called me a terrorist, a Black Lives Matter memoir. She's written a couple of articles that have been on Vice and Teen Vogue, where she was interviewed. But if you compare it to last year, they seem to have disappeared. They, you know, they were making big waves last year. I would say almost even more so than during the Ferguson protests, because of the way that they disrupted the political process and, you know, on the campaign trail. And then for some people became extremely quiet after the 2016 presidential elections in the U.S. And this year, there was ample opportunity for them to be loud in the U.S. It's been an extremely high number of police killings. We have the very active slave trade in Libya, and BLM claims to be a globally connected organization, help supporting units in Brazil, South Africa, Australia, the U.K. Seems like they might have disappeared.
What, to BuzzFeed?
BuzzFeed did a very extensive... It might take you an hour to read it. It's longer than the R. Kelly thing. You don't feel like they've disappeared?
No.
Okay, so what's going on?
I think it's kind of like the Tea Party, right? Is to sort of like as your coming out party, your announcement, protest is very useful. Because it gets you that immediate news coverage. Everyone's like, who are you? What are you? It's new. I don't know if protest in the large scale protest is going to get the same coverage that protests of the past have gotten. First of all, local protests using the ideology, the framework of Black Lives Matters have been all around, but they're not getting covered in the same way. They're not getting covered on the national scale. So, for example, there have been protests in Durham locally because of police misconduct that were rallied around Black Lives Matter. But you're not going to get covered in the same way as a Trayvon Martin protest is going to get covered, right? Mm-hmm. Or a Michael Brown protest is going to get covered, because that's a local situation. Mm. And so just because the news media is, you know, it has chosen not to highlight the people that are behind those protests and what those issues are, doesn't mean that Black Lives Matter has gone away. Meanwhile, we have 48,000 think pieces on, you know, Trump supporters. Right? We do. I mean, like Trump could be out of office for 20 years and they still be interviewing them same old Trump supporters. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's because that's who they're interested in talking to. They're not interested in talking to Black activists. Meanwhile, the FBI has, right? They said that there's Black terror organizations. They got called on it. And made a broad statement that has people wondering if we're getting ready to look at another COINTELPRO, where left-leaning organizations are going to be politically targeted by the federal government. So I think that Black Lives Matter is doing a well-needed incubation period, in the sense of that they have really embedded themselves into local ideologies and also global ideologies. Mm-hmm. And that's happening. And I think that it doesn't make sense to have my local protest about police misconduct in Mississippi or wherever I am as Black Lives branded as a Black Lives Matter protest per se. Mm-hmm. It also isn't very true, right? Black Lives Matter is a message, and it could be one of the messages, but I'm also going to have my local priorities. So I think what BuzzFeed is talking about is sort of like the sickness that has embedded political discourse, which is that political movements, people expect everything to kind of work under the same modalities as corporations. Mm-hmm. So they expect political movements to have these branding, these branding and marketing schemes that look familiar to them. And when that doesn't happen, they don't exist.
And because this is our pop culture section, pop culture this year hasn't really been that radical or revolutionary. However, two of the most successful films this year were severely Black.
Severely?
Severely Black.
What were they?
Get Out.
Uh-huh.
And Girls Trip. Okay. Both with major snubs from the Golden Globes.
Mm.
Golden Globe nomination for Get Out went to comedy because for whatever reason they've decided that Get Out is a comedy.
Mm.
Jordan Peele said is a documentary. And then we have Girls Trip, which the Hollywood Foreign Press, according to Jada Pinkett's tweets, refused to even screen. So there is no nomination for Tiffany Haddish, which was expected by everybody.
Mm.
She's already picked up her first nomination from a different award series, but
they're not refusing to screen it because of box office considerations, because you know they killed that. They killed the box office.
It was one of the most successful films this summer. So what do we have to think about that?
Mm.
And from pop culture, like we can't even win there. I mean, I guess, you know, you Bey fans had a bit of a win because she was the highest grossing female artist of the year. But when it came to the real deal, I went to see Girls Trip twice. I went to see Get Out twice.
When it comes to award shows, I tend to have a Sonny Baldwin type outlook on the award shows in the sense that they weren't created for us. Even when they do award us, they kind of award us in insulting ways. When you look at all of the roles that Denzel paid and what he got his award for, sure. Hallie, and what then she got. So it's really, I'm of two minds about it. On the one hand, of course, inclusion's important and it needs to be highlighted that, you know, they're basically furthering segregation by continuing to do this and continuing to give these snubs to these successful films. At the same time, I'm just like, yo, like we drive the entire culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are we like begging at the door for inclusion to these, like, I don't know.
I don't think that we are begging at the door for inclusion, but I do think it is important for the people who are in the game to be recognized, you know, that plays a part in the next deals that they get. And not only how much they earn, but if they can even make the deal, if they can even make the film, right? Because that's what people care about. Mm-hmm. That's what those producers and those distributors, they want to see. So I think I completely get it about the, you know, do we have to care about inclusion? We don't, but I think it, you know, the people in Hollywood do to a certain extent if they want to keep working and bringing us the things that we love.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I can't get fired up about it because we've been known this is the game.
Well, I can say that Girls Trip and Get Out remain two of the best films that I got to see this year in 2017. If not, I think Get Out is probably the best for me. Girls Trip was the funniest and Get Out was just the best film. Like, I was just talking about it on Sunday with a group of Black women who hadn't seen it yet. And I was like, what? What are you waiting on? You're going to need to watch it a few times.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like since Moonlight won, it's going to be another 5 years for us. We on 5-year blackout. And they wouldn't even let Moonlight win free and clear. But
right. You had to mess up the win. There will always be a stain on the win. There will probably be a joke about that at the next Oscar ceremony.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so music. 2017.
Hey, you know, because Chris Brown put out an album with 88 tracks. Hey, no, I'm just kidding.
Get it together. No. Come on, give me your highlights. 2017 in music.
2017 in music. My highlights. Oh my gosh. Do I even listen to music? Like, okay. My highlights for music. I love it that this is the year that Beyonce didn't put out an album and people are, you know, commemorating the anniversary of the spontaneous internet. I thought that was hilarious. But so SZA. Excited about that. Mm-hmm. Excited about Cardi B.
How about SZA tweeted a few weeks back, she had just taken her very first voice lesson. And she was excited to see how this would go.
That's good.
That's
but
deep.
I do.
You just okay. You put out an album.
Now people just think I'm throwing shade, but it's not shade. It's true. Like if you are singing like some gospel-y type Whitney Houston type joint in front of the choir, there's a certain amount of control you have to have that if you're talking like this, you don't have to have. So I feel that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
I can see her, but she's good. I love her.
It was definitely Cardi B's year. I agree with that for real.
Definitely Cardi B's year. And I just love her as an all around personality. I think that her music, just like dancing, is just another jump off point for real. For real. I think what we're looking at is the beginning of a personality, you know, kind of like, you know, when RuPaul put out that album.
Mm-hmm.
Like it wouldn't go. It wasn't going to end with that album. Mm. That was about the music for RuPaul. So, Cardi B, most definitely.
So you going to just leave Remy Ma out? You going to leave Remy Ma out? She cut throats. She was bagging bodies. And now Azalea Banks has decided to have beef with her too. And Remy was up in the YouTubes and the Instagrams talking about, I am making multi-million dollar deals.
She is. With whom?
And had receipts of the begging that Azalea has been doing. And Wendy Williams came for her because Azalea said she needed vaginal rejuvenation. She is under 30 with no kids.
Why did she say she needed that?
Ooh. Well, Wendy had a very, very sex worker negative hateration.
Yeah, you don't want to
spin on that.
Wendy's not here for any level of feminist discourse, no.
No. Her dad was even in the audience. She was like, Daddy.
So she said she needed vaginal rejuvenation.
Uh-huh. She said she need money. Mm-hmm. For that type of thing.
So she fundraised for the vaginal rejuvenation.
She was trying to get in with Remy. Because I guess her and Remy were at that time still cool. And she was like, you know, help a partner out. No, I can't get work. Nobody want to work with me. What it look like.
I cannot.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot.
Mm-hmm. It's rough.
Well, okay, so Azalea said this from her own mouth, or this is
Remy had the receipts. No. She has the receipts.
Violating confidentiality.
Yes, major violation. But it's a big beat.
They hit under the belt, literally and figuratively, in this rap game, don't they? Mm-hmm. They do too much. I mean, that's why I was kind of happy to see Cardi B and Nicki on the same track. Now, they're not in the same frame.
No.
They're not in the same frame. But they're on the same track. You know, that Offset track.
Nicki did send her some love, though. I did see on Instagram when Cardi B had her number one. Then Nicki was in the comments. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Instagram will show you who's in the comments if you follow them. So, yeah, I don't think they have any major... But I'm sure it was a blow to Nicki because Nicki's never had that number one standing on her own two feet.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. See, this is why I'm not here for Remy. and I didn't even know about all that because I don't put her on mute. I love certain things about, you know, her thing, like kind of her image. Like I love that her and Papoose seem to be like ride or die. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I, you know, I love that she's an ex-con and came out and has rebuilt a life after that. I think that's amazing and inspirational. But she is so brutal.
Yeah.
In the way she comes after folks, that I just have to be like, okay, yo, I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't. It's just too much. And I don't like your flow enough for this.
Oops.
I just don't. I mean, like, it's that like real kind of boom bap New York style, which yes, I usually love, but there's something just so super hard edge about Remy where I'm just like, yo, like, I feel like if we went to the same high school, you would have just like stuffed me in a locker. Like, I can't. Maybe she did. Like, no, coming out of New York, maybe she wanted them girls to jump me. I don't know. Like,
she's slightly younger. She's slightly younger. And you're taller. Okay. I don't think so. It wouldn't have been her. She also wouldn't have been at your school because I don't think that's her strength. So.
A mess.
Okay. One last bit. What is it? Music. We talked about music. We talked about film. What big thing of 2017 in pop culture have we missed?
Oh, queer hip hop. Can we talk about that for a second? I've just been so looking forward to like queer hip hop artists and what they've been doing and the new artists that have come out. Not really new, but just new to me that I've seen. Love seeing J Boogie perform this year.
Yes.
Cakes the Killer. Come on. What about you? I know you even have more access to this than I do. I'm in Vienna. Hook me up with that London flavor.
Well, obviously we had Carnage on the show at the beginning of the year. And Carnage is doing his thing. He just released something else. He sent it to me on WhatsApp. You know, you can find it on our Twitter feed. So I'm loving the fact that there is this, I won't call it a new wave, but there is momentum right now behind people who identify beyond any kind of norms. So beyond the queer norm, beyond the het norm, they just doing them. And Carnage and J Boogie are definitely two of those people for me.
This is an excerpt of my conversation with Jay, who lives here in Vienna, Austria, but comes from Uganda. He co-founded the organization called Afro Rainbow Austria for LGBTQIA Africans here in Vienna with Henry. Here he talks a little bit about his story. To learn more about Jay and Afro Rainbow Austria, please see our special edition this week at The Queer Truth.
Okay, so let's get started.
Yeah. Well, my name is Jay. I'm from Uganda. That's where I was born, and I lived there. Went to school there. Yeah, till I finished my studies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I came to Austria 2 years ago. Yeah. Coming to 2 years, actually. Yeah, now we live here in Australia. Yeah. And
now, we met through your organization that you grounded, that you founded with Henry.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The,
sure.
The organization is called Afro Rainbow
Austria.
I've been talking about it on the podcast for a while.
Yeah.
Very, very excited about this organization. So yeah. Could you tell us, what is it?
Afro Rainbow Austria stands for black, like as it is Afro, rainbow. It's like LGBTQ people from Africa who have managed to make it here or who are living here, and black people, not only Afro, like we used to stand it for black because it's black. Living in Austria. So this is what we stand for. We know the challenges. As I told you, this background of my life in Uganda. And many people are facing more hardships. And who are here already. So they have stories.
Let's talk about Uganda.
Uganda. Well, Uganda is so diverse. I like talking about Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's all I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my life. I can't separate my life from Uganda. This is where I was born. This is where I grew up and studied and everything. So that's my life is more of Uganda because I've been outside Uganda 2 years. Yeah, the 26 years ago I was in Uganda, so that's all I know. Yeah, but I think it's a beautiful country. I don't even think I know it's a beautiful country. I'm the last
mm-hmm.
in the family, and it's like my father wanted me to be like, I come from a very religious family, like with a Muslim background, whereby my family, the father, all the family members are like staunch Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Whereby, like, I think my family, actually not I think, but my father wanted me to be like an imam, you know, imam.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. They're leading prayers in the mosque.
Mm-hmm.
And so my childhood, actually when I was 6 years, he took me to a school
mm-hmm.
of imams to be taught about Quran and leading people in prayers and preachings, things like that. Actually, that's where I got the opportunity also to learn Arabic, to learn the Quran, because I did this for 7 years, yeah, preparing me for this.
Oh.
Yeah, so you know, the Quran and sexuality, what it teaches is really, again, it's like, for example, gay or lesbian or something like that, it's so against it. And like in this school, it's like, it was a single school, actually, like boys only, yeah. And it was a boarding school as well. It was a good experience starting from there. Actually, I started something new or something. But coming out to know that you're in this group of people and you are different, it's really hard. Because there's nothing like acceptance in this, yeah. Because it's like you've been a school or in a community whereby every day they preach against you. Because in Uganda it's something not even talked about. Till recently, I think 4 years ago, that it could be in the papers or on television that someone can talk about gay or something like that. But before it wasn't like that. So just imagine in school, you can't tell anyone to say anything. So then, yeah, growing up, like I came to my last year of high school, then I was 17, and then I went to a school and I changed school, and then I went to another school to finalize my high school, and then I met there a teacher. So this teacher was like my teacher, but he had gone through the same school with my brother. So you know, then he approached me first, because I had this fear to approach anyone to tell them. My first openly like coming out to tell someone, you know, I love you, was then with that teacher. You know, and after him approaching me first, you know, I was like, for him was brave. He was like, oh yeah, you know, but also took some time. We were friends for long, but you couldn't tell someone, you know, because he didn't know, for example, that, you know, he was also like not sure, you know, or he feared, because if I wasn't, or if he tells me something like that, and then I'm known like gay, and then I report, this was a great danger to him as well. So it was a bit, you know, there is a situation of like, you don't know who to tell, you know, if I tell my friend, because Also, all my friends didn't know about this. Even the people I call my best friends, you couldn't tell them about your sexuality. This was a challenge. You have to live a life of secrecy. And we started up a relationship, which was really my first experience of a really relationship with someone. And and so he was a teacher. And then I finished my high school, which was good. And then nothing had happened, like they had not found out and everything. So I went to university. He stayed at the school teaching. So once in a while, I could go back to visit him or something. So in this situation, when I was away, he got someone else as well. So one time I just went there and he didn't invite me. I didn't tell him that I was coming. And then, yeah, because I had everything, the keys and everything.
Oh.
I got there and I didn't know that also he had gotten someone else or okay. something. So he was really doing his game, playing his cards very well and something like that. But then when I came and I didn't expect anything, I was like, okay, this is a surprise. I'm going to give someone a surprise, buy my flowers, you know, surprising someone.
Flowers.
And then reached where he was staying. Waiting for someone, throwing flowers, you know, blah, something like that. And someone comes with another person. So, he was staying in a school compound.
Okay.
Yeah. So, it was chaos. So,
did you cause a scene?
I personally didn't cause a scene because it's like, I knew the repercussion.
Right.
It wouldn't be good.
Uh-huh.
And but the other boy caused
caused the scene.
I think he knew about me already, and I think they had like organized when he's coming. I knew him also before, but like they are friends. This is what I know. They are just friends, and yeah, we are not like so much into like getting together at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just heard about him when they were talking, but as friends, I thought. So these ones come. They find me home, and then like a jealousy came up through, you know. So the teacher, my boyfriend, I was like, okay, now face it, this is it. I don't know how we could do it. So the other boy caused the scene. He was like, no, you told me. He told him that I'm a friend. He told me he's a friend.
Okay.
So then finding out it's not how it is, it was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the boy just went out and called his friends.
Oh.
Yeah. So he went from this image that he's gay, he went to get his friends to come and punish gays.
Wow. So even though he was gay himself...
Yes.
His vision was...
Yeah. He knew.
I'm going to get all of my homophobic friends
to come and
punish you for being gay. I'm going to out you as punishment for cheating on me.
Yes, for cheating on me. So it's like now I found out gays are here. People come and, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, so happened? What happened is like the boys came. Hey, come out. You have to burn you today. You're going to be dead today. It's your end of the day. I was like, throwing stones and breaking windows. So, and in a school whereby there are many, 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 many students, it was a scene. The teachers came up, and the headmaster of the school was also staying at the school, came up, and the police was not very far, actually. The headmaster, when they see that there is a chaos in school, they just call police.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we couldn't do anything. Others were protecting, not like to destroy the building. Others were hitting it with rocks. Mm-hmm. There are people sinning inside here, blah, blah. And I was there panicking and everything. I was like, oh my God, this is really... And in the same school, I had a cousin who was in the school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, good enough, like, the school authority and like calm down the students, and the police also came and they dispersed them and everything. So good enough, nothing had happened to us. But they took us to police. And my cousin had to tell other people, family members, because the family information spread to the family. And also I was taken to police as well. So this was also another situation where somehow I needed family help to get out of that. Whereby it was, okay, if it is like that, we've been like suspecting. There was nothing, because suspecting is something different from real thing. So now it's proved you are like that. And I don't want to deny, because it's like, I would say, oh, I'm not. And then the next day still it happens the same way or something like that. So I was like, why should I? Yeah, they asked me, are you gay? I am, but what should I do about it? I've tried to, you know, to change. I don't know. I'm feeling this way. It's like, since I was born, I don't know nothing else. So that's how my family got to know about it. It was really a hard situation now. And then they had to make a meeting, and, you know, till the family say, no, now you're not part of the family if you're like that.
They said that to you?
Yeah.
So they said, if you're gay, you're not.
Not even if you are gay.
Just if you're like that.
You're gay.
Uh-huh.
You're not part of us. It's okay. Not like asking, are you gay, to me to say no or yes or something. Mm-hmm. Now it's proved. And the thing is, with African families, their decisions are really hard. It's not like you have to talk about it. No, it's like a military thing. You're not, I don't want to see you again, blah, blah, blah. In our, don't come back. If you have even a problem or something, don't. Just go where you belong. In this world, find your other family. You're not part of the family. So something like that is. When my family was like, okay, now you're not part of us. I was like, okay, now I can't live in this society. Let me go somewhere very far. I do my things and then I live my own life. So I tried out somewhere else. And then also with the police, I also like didn't go back anymore, because I was like, what if I go back and then they arrest me forever? I was like...
So do you know how the case panned out?
This is where I was coming. So I was like, I started thinking of myself in jail. Was like, all this time between, it was something like 2 months. Should I go to police? Should I do what? I was like, what if I go? Okay, maybe it might be 1 year, 2 year, or forever in jail.
What is the official consequence if you are convicted of being gay?
So if you're convicted of being gay in Uganda, it's up to a lifetime imprisonment.
Yeah. Does that happen often?
It happens, yeah. But you can be... If the judge is generous, you can get some 20 years, which is okay.
Mm-hmm.
10 years. But yeah, he can say, oh yeah, if he's so homophobic, he can say, get out of the society.
Mm.
Yeah, because you're not normal. You belong somewhere. But also the hard situation is that I was like, thinking about it, I was like, maybe, okay, the judge will be, let me go there. The judge will be a bit generous. I was trying to create these illusions in me. 7 years maybe, or 5 years. I was like, but thinking about the situations of prison, because then if you're gay, they think then prison will teach you the right way. Then they put you into a prison of like 30 guys and they tell them everything, you know, and you have to tell why you're here and just know about... putting you into a room of 30 people, hungry people who have never had sex, for example, for 10 years, for example. And they think...
There's an expectation of reparative rape.
Of course, this is what happened. I reached this point as I was worthless, but I didn't really give up like I was worthless. I was like, maybe I can make it better. So then I made a dangerous journey to Turkey, no, to Greece, and everywhere I went, and then till I came here.
So you came here to Vienna,
yeah.
You got your documents from your friend back home,
yeah,
and you got into university.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, got into university also, and then 1 year and 2 years and 2 years actually, that now I can speak German and everything is okay. This is something like, you know, I stand for, you know, and also like coming up with this organization and motivating
others.
This is now like, okay, now I'm starting to see my life like coming back from on the road. And
I'm going to take, you know, I've only been saying questions because, you know, of course, in the podcast, people can't see you. First of all, you are gorgeous, right? And just have a, you just emanate like a centeredness and a groundedness about you that is unbelievable. So hearing this whole journey has just been magnificent.
Yeah.
I am elated that Afro-Rainbow Austria has happened, and even though your story is harrowing, it's also inspiring, and I'm very, very happy that it has led you here.
Yeah.
Now, as you know, I could talk to you for another 4 hours.
Yeah, I think my story,
I can talk
to you tomorrow.
We did not even get into you dating here and that. We didn't even get into...
Because I have a lot to talk about.
Oh, no.
I have stories.
Like I need to have like a queer dating in Austria roundtable, actually.
Yeah, and the thing is...
That's a whole can of worms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I want to talk about myself, about everything. And I want to talk about it from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I want to build how it happened and how... Yeah. So that's why it takes long. I'm not this running into the...
Yeah,
yeah. So this is... That's why we can talk forever.
Yeah, and it's worth it. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate the conversation.
Yeah. I also appreciate. Yeah, you know, talking to you also makes me feel good. You know, sharing my experiences with anyone else makes me like, if it was like a secret, I've now told someone else. You know, it's no longer a secret. You know, and it's no longer bothering me or alone, you know. I shared it, you know. If it was, now we are sharing it together.
Yeah.
You know, if it was like I had this big thing on me, now it's not big that anymore.
In our final segment, you can tell me what you're excited about, what you're looking forward to in 2018, or you can tell me what you're still excited about. That's already happened in 2017.
Mm. Okay, so I'm excited about the 2018 on a pop culture level is how we're going to take over all the movies. So we're talking about primary, you know, because we're going to have a Taraji P. Henson assassin. We're going to have that. We're talking about Black Panther, okay? Because we're going to have an all-Black, pretty much, superhero situation on the Marvel. Okay.
Yeah.
We're talking about A Wrinkle in Time because we got Oprah, we got Kovanza Knight, we got, you know, we hooking it all up with the children. We giving the children a little something extra. Okay, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about
and
like
Ava. Can we get a name, Ava, who is behind
Ava
the camera?
Yes. Just giving us a whole suite of Black excellence. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so excited about going to the movies in 2018 for the things that are coming up. And those are just kind of like the high profile stuff. Tiffany Haddish. I try to get fancy and I mess people up. So Tiffany Haddish. No.
Okay.
Haddish. just started a deal for her own thing, her own, it's, you know, so this stuff bubbling too, that I think we'll see at the end of 2018, given the success of what 2017 brought for Black film. You know, Jada could do whatever she want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jordan Peele could do whatever he want. So we'll see what happens. So I'm excited about my popcorn in the movie theater in 2018. What are you excited about?
I'm excited about Lena Waithe's myriad of projects, but the first one on Showtime, I'm super excited about seeing what she's going to bring us, because I want that little window, even if it is fictionalized. I want that little window into her life in Chicago, because I just love everything about Lena. Also, did I forget to mention that she liked my tweets? I just need to remind everybody.
We can retire. Look, this is our last podcast ever, y'all. Remind
everybody that she liked my tweets.
We can retire because right now, I don't know. Like, I'm building a life with Lena now. So we don't need to go on.
I'm very excited about Lena. I'm very excited to see how Issa is going to make things better, because me and the former first lady were both very upset about how she played us at the end of Insecure Season 2. Someone even captured the moment when Michelle Obama was talking to Issa Rae about her dissatisfaction with a certain ending sequence that I don't want to ruin for people who maybe haven't seen it yet, even though at this time it would no longer be a spoiler because you've had enough time to watch it. But anyway, it was a highlight for me when I saw that, because I was like, see, me and the First Lady, we get it. So I want to see her come back from that, because she hurt us. Okay. And Lakeith was playing with us, because he posted a picture on Instagram talking about, it was like a crew from Atlanta, and he was like, you know, he put like some random date, April 2018. Then he changed the date. No. I think he put first February 2018. Then he changed the date to April 2018. Then he changed it again to January
2019. Oh, no, man.
I was like, Lakeith.
How are you going to do CPT in the future? Like, that's not even going to work.
Lakeith, how you going to play us like that? Where is Mr. Glover? I need to have a conversation with him. We need Atlanta back next year.
He got to do the Star Wars thing.
I'm also excited about watching John Boyega on the screen again. I don't know if you have seen the clip of him on the red carpet with his entire family, but I already loved the clip of him on the red carpet last time with his Peckham boys. This time he was like, I'm going to go one bigger than my Peckham boys. I'm going to bring the whole family. And in the middle of the interview, he was like, you know what? Let me bring my mom and dad over here. I want you to meet them. So I'm looking forward to it. I have not read one single review of the new film out, but you know, it's the holiday season. On Boxing Day on the 26th, I will be in the movies watching the new Star Wars. You best believe it.
Real English now talking about Boxing Days.
You know what? But that's apparently a thing that people say in the States too. Some people told me they say that in the States. I didn't know anything about that. I was like, that's just the 26th. I don't.
This barrel, you, yes, European.
That's just the 26th. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's it. I'm looking forward to those things. I have nothing to say about the rest of the world, because.
So you got the small screen. I got the big screen.
Basically, it'll do. We'll figure it out together. Well, that's all for this week and this year. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you can, send us a donation via patreon.com/thequeertruth. Until next year, peace out.